I'll be entirely honest with you. I was honored to that he asked me to come up here and talk. Then he told me I had to wear a blazer. Okay. And I don't like being told what to do. And then several years ago, about 5.5 years ago, I threw away all my blazers, all my suits, all my ties. And part of me was like, fuck that. I ain't going. But my willingness to start taking some direction and making it about somebody other than me is the same reason why 5.5 years ago, when Brandon and I both didn't think I was going to make it, right, that I'm still sober today. So I'm going to wear this blazer, but I will admit to you begrudgingly. So my sober date's December 29th, 2016. I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. Okay. It's an important detail. All right. Some of y'all are laughing. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I sponsor guys. They sponsor guys. Some of them are here with me today. My home group is the Boomerang Group, CA Group in Noonan, Georgia. And I'm a member of another fellowship as well. So if you ever find yourself in Noonan, come look us up. We meet Wednesday nights at 6:30. Every Wednesday night. You know, I didn't have a lot of time to reflect on what I was going to talk about today, although I've told my story multiple times before. I rode up here with a group of guys, and they helped remind me just how insane my thinking is, which I'm grateful for, right? And we laughed. I mean, we had some belly laughs, and, like, they were saying some really stupid shit. I was driving, so I just wasn't – I wasn't at risk of saying it. But I go back – I grew up in a – I didn't have an alcoholic father, an alcoholic mother, but I had a rageaholic. I had a hard-driving dad that liked to get violent. He liked to have things his way. Any deviation from that was considered a failure, and you know, there were some pretty serious consequences that came with it. So I was just like a lot of other boys, I think, growing up. You know, I thought whoopings was just what we got, and like there was different levels of whoopings, but I didn't think that there was anything wrong with it. Everybody else I knew I thought was getting their ass beat by their dad too. But I learned that if I could just like separate myself, I could start to blend in, right? Like, so maybe it was with school, maybe it was with athletics, right? Somehow, some way, I wanted to get approval, acceptance. I wanted to feel a part of. Right, in a lot of ways, that started to happen for me. Academics kind of came easy. I didn't have to put a whole lot of work into it. I did just enough to get the results I got. But athletics was something that I really gravitated towards. And I was decent at football. And that was a great environment for a guy like me because I like to be rewarded, right? Like, I like for y'all to tell me I'm a good boy and, like, give me accolades. And I need humans to tell me what a good job I'm doing. And football, y'all did that, right? Like, so I found this environment where it was okay for boys to be boys, right? To be violent, like, you know, fight in a locker room. You tell me to go hit somebody and, like, try to knock snot out of them, you'll make me captain of the football team. So I did that. And I did it pretty darn well, enough that I started to get some attention from some schools. And I was gravitating towards that. In this period, I was introduced into alcohol. At 11 years old, and it was Smirnoff vodka and orange juice, and we were locked down in a hotel room in Denver, Colorado, because we got snowed in a snowstorm in Atlanta. We couldn't come back, and I will tell you, there was a group of my buddy's sisters there that I wanted to impress, and I was really nervous around them. I took that first swig of that OJ and vodka, and that felt really nice, and I'll tell you, I continued to drink that until I vomited all over this damn hotel room. Now, the next morning, right, something changed in me, okay? Like, I was violently sick, right? My mother is yelling at me because I'm throwing up in the taxi the next morning. I can vividly remember as far back as 11 thinking, that was it. Something changed. I felt comfortable. I felt a part of right then, right? So that was the beginning of, like, this pursuit of mind-altering substances that pretty much commanded all of my attention for 37 years of my life. And I continued to kind of just, you know, do what I needed to do to get the attention I needed. I got introduced to cocaine at 18, and I'll never forget. I was in Athens, Georgia. I was on the back of a a toilet seat, and it was about that long, y'all. Okay? And I'm telling you, to 3 a.m, I felt everything I'd ever wanted. I was able to rock and roll. I felt invincible. I wasn't afraid of what you thought of me. I thought I was funny. I had a great time with that much, 18 years old. It didn't end like that. You know, my drinking and my drugging continued. I told you I like attention. I like a hard charging environment. I have a big appetite. I want to be around other guys that have big appetites as well. I got done with college. I was recruited out of college to go work for a bank over in Europe. I'd been working over for banks throughout that time. I graduated that morning, jumped on a plane, got to Europe. And it was perfect, right? Like, y'all started talking about, when I first got in here, I read this part about self-centeredness. Extreme self-centeredness, y'all told me, which I couldn't even get my head around early on, right? That was the root of my problem. And I thought, you know, y'all all sound like aliens telling me things like this. But it makes sense looking back on it, right? This environment, this banking environment was like 20 hours a day, cots in the thing, like who could outwork who. And like when we were done, like cocaine, alcohol, women, all this stuff was accepted, right? Like we got rewarded for this behavior. We got rewarded with money. We got rewarded with prestige, all these things. Man, it fit me wanting to feed my ego about as good as any job as I could have ever asked for. Right, so I gravitated towards that. Kind of like a lot of guys, you know, I just kind of thought, you know, we work hard, we play hard, right? And I just, somewhere along the way, I crossed this line, okay? And the drinking and the using started to take different things. I got married, right? Like maybe that would be enough to slow me down, but you know, the first time that she delivers a child, I end up being up all night the night before. We're trying to go to the hospital. She's going in delivery. The only thing I'm telling her is we can't go to the hospital until I get coffee. Right? It's like 4 a.m, right? We can't find coffee anywhere. She's screaming, trying to have a baby, and I could give a damn about her. I just want my coffee. Or the child that's mine inside of her. Right? Extreme self-centeredness, y'all told me, was the root of my problem. And yeah, you know, the these things began to continue. They began to exacerbate, right? The cocaine progressed to the point where, you know, I wanted to change the way I felt about things. I remember I wanted to be able to show up and participate in life and be and think that you that I was doing the right thing, right? So I'd drive the right car, I'd have the right house, I'd have this look, but I started coaching Little League Baseball, right? And because that's what respectful guys are supposed to do when they have sons. Right? But at this point, like I had started to use cocaine, and Brandon must have alluded to this part of this story because I hear you laughing. So I had started using cocaine on a more regular basis during this time, right? And I was the kind of guy that, like, it was important to me that I show up the right way. But it's 10 o'clock one morning, I'm sitting at the office, right? I'd been up the night before doing what I do. Came home late, 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course, you know, my wife had been calling all night. She was really pleased with me at this point, but I could have given a damn what she had to say, to be honest with you. She was the prop. She's just a nagging old wife. So at 10 o'clock in the morning, I was feeling edgy, and I was like, I just need a little bump to take the edge off, right? And just one, all right? Just one. So I took one, right? Did a little bit of work, and it's about 11 o'clock. This ball game that I'm supposed to be a coach for is at 4 o'clock. Now it's like 11:30, and that first one felt real nice, and like I probably got enough time to take another one, right? I've got this. I've got it, right? Just one more. All right, so one more. Well, look, you guys know what happened, right? So it's 2 o'clock, we're doing more. By 3 o'clock, I'm going through the drive-thru Chick-fil-A trying to eat chicken breast just to like stop tweaking out a little bit, okay? Right? I've got to coach balls to a bunch of young, like 6-year-old boys, coach pitcher, 9-year-olds. So it comes time for game time, and it's the sun's out. I've been up using, right? Put on my sunglasses so you can't see my eyes. Maybe the parents won't notice. Like, I'm real busy. I'm important. So I'm, like, looking at my phone, not communicating with anybody. But I go straight up to the mound. And immediately, like, I'm coach pitching to these kids, and I'm hammering them with baseballs, right? Hammering them. Not only that, like, I'm yelling at these kids because they're not hitting the ball. They're like, Coach, I'm getting hit by a ball. Like, how do you want me to hit this damn thing? But look, y'all, remember, like, at 9 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock, I had no intentions, right, of using and being this messed up. What happened? Why was one not enough? Right, there was a time. Remember in Athens, it was about that long on the back of a toilet bowl, and that ran to 4 in the morning. But now it's 11 o'clock, and it's 4 o'clock, and I'm beating kids with baseballs and yelling at them. But see, in my mind, I've got, you know, I look, I'm telling you, I got a big appetite now. I'm a big deal, right? So I don't want to hear anything about this. I've got this, right? You know, this continues to progress. My frequency of using becomes more frequent. You know, one of the things that I always like to remember is I end up having 2 trips to an ER for a cocaine overdose, whatever that means. I thought I was having a heart attack. All right, the second time I'm laying around when my wife went out of town, it was like, you know, free for all, right? I got the house to myself. The kids are gone. Both times she was out of town, I had free for all the house. I didn't have to leave. I could get really weird and have all the weird people I wanted over there. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but, you know, I like to get weird when I do a bunch of dope, okay? Like, really weird. All right? And I like to have weird people in there with me. So it's like 3 in the morning, okay? I am on a 2-day run at this point, okay? And at this point, I'd been out in, like, nothing but my underwear, like, with a beam light, yelling at people outside with a sawed-off shotgun. Right? Luckily, I lived on, like, a big lot, so, like, maybe the neighbors saw me, maybe they didn't, right? But so at some point, I think my heart's going to pound out of my chest. I hit the ground. I'm, like, butt naked, okay? Like to get weird. And I'm calling 911 saying I think I'm having a heart attack. So they send over the ambulance. Again, this is the second time, okay? Both times I called on myself. So second time they come pick me up, they take me to the hospital, and I'll be damned, they take me to St. Joe's Emory Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, and I got the exact same damn ER doctor. And that sumbitch looked at me, and I mean point blank, looked at me straight in the face and says, you're nothing but a degenerate drug addict, don't ever come back to my hospital again. So at this point, remember, they check me in butt naked. I'm not in a sport coat at this point. I'm in a hospital issue gown with slippers. That's all I got. He doesn't want to treat me. They get me stable enough. I'm not having a heart attack. Get the hell out of my hospital. I know a lot of people. I grew up in Atlanta. All of a sudden, my mind's like, who the hell am I going to see in the lobby of St. Joe's at Emory? Right? So I'm freaking out. I pick up this thing. I call an Uber. Right? He pulls up, and I'm like tracking him on this. He pulls up to the little porte-cochere area, and I'm on the phone with him saying, hey, where are you? He says, he's here. I said, look, unlock the door. And I mean, like a convict, I'm hauling ass through the lobby of the Emory thing, and I'm like jumping in the back of this guy's Uber. Can you imagine what he's thinking? Like, what the fuck's going on? And I'm like, take me home, right? Right, after this absolute debacle, right? Like, for sure, when I get home, I'm done, right? Normal people, like, you thought you almost just had your second overdose, right? And I'm here to tell you, like, something in my mind very quickly forgot what just happened. I've got the world's greatest forgetter. I don't know about y'all. I shit you not. I got out of that Uber, probably didn't say thank you, and I walked right back into a plate of cocaine with a outfit on. And I was back on another tear. I got this. Right? I mean, how is this happening, right? At this point, by the way, like, everything that I thought that the world required of me had, in terms of earthly things, I had done, right? Like, I was flying all over the world. We were doing some, what I thought was fancy business deals. Some things were happening. I was married. We had some kids, right? Got the house, got the car. Money wasn't a problem anymore. Right? Everything that I thought the world wanted me to do that would tell me that I was good enough, I thought I had accomplished. but I'm in a hospital smock after a trip in an ambulance in an ER, being kicked out of the hospital. I'm back. Golly, man. That was a weird day. Everyone around me knew that I was an asshole. And they were okay with it, I think, to a degree. Okay? I did a really good job of covering up. I mean, I think my wife turned a blind eye to this, but, you know, I encouraged her that, you know, me staying up at 3 o'clock in the morning was part of me entertaining clients and part of the work that I was doing. And, you know, we moved forward. But, you know, 2016, the big book talks about the real alcoholic or the real addict. Right? It talks about hardly drawing a sober breath. Well, that was me in 2016. I can't really put together a 24-hour period, right, that I did not ingest, snort, smoke, or drink some form of mind-altering substance. Now, Cocaine Anonymous is a good fit for me. We're open to all mind-altering substances. But to be clear, cocaine was my master, right, over my kids, over my wife, over the stuff. When y'all talked about finding a higher power, my power was cocaine. 2016, more or less, is a blur. Although, you know, in terms of business world, like I'm knocking sticks down, doing great. Everybody's rewarding me. They're all making a lot of money. I'm making a lot of money, but I am high as a kite and out of control. All right, so we go through Thanksgiving of 2016. I don't know about y'all, but like November and December when I was out there using and drinking was a great time to party. It was just another excuse for a good party because most people I knew stayed drunk or high throughout November and December anyways, which I did. Right? Come Christmas time, like you got kids. We're supposed to be making it about kids. Like a lot of people want to dress up, play Santa Claus, do something for the kid, you know, do the Santa deal. Not me, right? I left that to my wife. She got in an argument with me. I said some mean things. She said some mean things and, on December 26, 2016, I took that as a good reason to go disappear to the places that I like to disappear to, right? Which was normally like these rooms where me and some other people would like to be and they would co-sign. They had no problem with my using. So I did that on December 26th and I locked myself on a 3-day run. Kids at home. Wife at home, out totally out of control, unable to physically stop. So I'm sitting around and it's like, you know, it's now December 29th. And I've been with these people and like people are coming and going and I'm laying on the bed, I'm naked again. And I like to get weird. And I'm pretty messed up, right? And I'm sitting there on the bed doing whatever it was I was doing, and I look up and there's an air vent. Like about like that one right there. And or maybe a little bit bigger, more of like a commercial air vent. But nonetheless, an air vent. And I look up and I notice, and we're in the bedroom, right? And there's this like circular lens thing coming out of the air vent. And I was like, fuck, that looks like a camera. Right? So I jump up and I go to reach up to that vent and yeah, that's a camera. I go to pull and I go in the bathroom. There's another camera in that bathroom, too. I'd been hanging out at this place pretty frequently for 2016. And so in that moment, I got pretty sober real fast in my head anyways. But it was kind of like this. It was like shortly after that bathroom camera, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, boom. 14 SWAT team. Individuals blow down a door with assault rifles pointed at me. I think the power intended for me to learn surrender one way or the other. This is one way, this is how I learned it. Right? Something happened because up right before that moment, right? Like I was too afraid to shoot myself, but I wanted to check. I kept hoping the dope would do it, right? But like it just never did. And I purposely remember buying enough, being like, this will do it. This will take me out. But it just didn't happen, right? So here I am, this guy, right, that, like, I thought I'd done everything I was supposed to do. I went to the right schools. I got the right job. I married this right girl, what I thought was supposed to do. You know, and, like, here I am. Like, there is 14 assault rifles pointed at my face. And these guys were in the process of giving me a gift that I couldn't do for myself. You see, in retrospect, my power sent 14 angels in there that day. Okay, now, let's be clear. They didn't look like the angels in Sunday school growing up, okay? These guys were in riot gear. They had the mask. They had the guns. It was loud. It was not pleasant. But something happened, right? If you'd asked me the day before, I probably would have said, like, please fucking shoot me. But something right then and there, when they said hit the floor, I hit the floor. I think they meant it. All right, I hit the floor, and this is where the gift really began for me. It's about 11 o'clock on December 29th, 2016, okay? They take me off to jail. Right, and I will tell you, I've talked to Brandon, I've talked to Tarek, I've talked to a bunch of people about this. See, I think that what happened to me is I was beginning to have a spiritual experience in jail, right? For the first time in a long time, I felt at peace. All right, they put me into DeKalb County Level 6. I promise you, DeKalb County Level 6 sucks. You get 3 hours a day. I'm sitting there at 3 o'clock in the morning, some guy gets checked in, my head's about this far from the toilet, and he's doing what he's got to do on the toilet, and shit was getting real. But I will tell you, I was at peace. Now, not being next to his butt, but the gig was up. The gig was up. Like, something happened. The part that I left something out that's important, right? The first time I was introduced to the rooms of a 12-step program, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, was 19 years earlier, okay? I'd come in, I'd hear these people, like, you know, Brandon and other people talking, I'd be like, fuck that. I had no interest in stopping at this point, okay? Commonly referred to as Yoda, I think y'all call him sometimes. But I didn't want to stop. 19 years, right? Y'all talked about this progression of this disease. Like, when I first came in, I was just a kid that liked to do a little bit of blow. Liked to drink. I probably played hard, a little bit harder than others. But I've got this. I needed those 19 years of progression to get to a place where, when I'm on level 6 in DeKalb County, I found peace. I assumed the wife was gone. I assumed the kids were gone. I assumed the reputation, the job, the money, the relationship with all these banks, I figured that was gone. And I was okay with it. Like, I was experiencing an acceptance of powerlessness. In this moment, like, it wasn't like spiritual terms or anything from the big book, but, like, I knew in that moment that I was done. Okay? I didn't know how. I didn't know what it was going to look like. There was fear there, to say the least. But I knew I was done. They shipped me off to rehab. Like, one of the other gifts they gave me is they charged me with a RICO, which carried a 15-year prison term with it. Possession of narcotics and pandering. Possession of narcotics and pandering were easy. RICO was a little bit different animal. But I go to rehab. They send me out to this nice place out in Arizona. It was a 12-step. It wasn't a 12-step program, but they introduced us to the 12 steps. What they really did was they bred this idea of willingness, right? They said, when you go home, you need to find your tribe. And I remember sitting out there in Arizona, and I was like, I don't know about y'all, but I grew up in Georgia, and, like, this language that y'all are talking out here, like, nobody talks a shit back home, okay? You see, like, my download was, is like, cowboy the fuck up, right? Don't ask for help. Right, that was weak. Right, so, like, all of a sudden, like, y'all are saying different things. And thank God I was desperate enough, right, that I was willing to hear this, and I could look at another man and say, hey, I need some help. I don't know what I'm going to do. Now, albeit not perfectly, right, because I met Brandon. I spent 60 days out there in the desert, had this most amazing, powerful experience. I was on fire for recovery. I was not down with this big G word yet, but I was for sure on fire for recovery and being sober, and I'm going to be the best little AACA boy you've ever met in your life. Watch this, right? I'm going to do it all, right? So as Brandon said, I went in and out and hired myself a sober coach, And like, I got like six therapists and I'm living at Triangle Clubhouse in Atlanta, and I'm going to meetings around the time. I'm in IOP, I'm in a PHP, right? See, I was also given this gift, right? I parked my job and left those people alone for about 12 months. So I could do all this. Now, that's not sustainable. I don't encourage y'all to do this, right? So I bought into this damn thing where people say meeting makers make it. Right? I thought, if I make enough meetings, I'll get this. Like, I'm here to report to you. I know a lot of meeting makers that don't fucking make it. The meetings don't get me sober. I didn't get myself sober. Those cops, the SWAT team members, they didn't get me sober. You see, there was something at play, because somewhere between December 29th, 2016, and like the time that I got back from Arizona and I met Brandon and Tarek, I remember the first time I met Tarek, I was like, Tarek was like, "You need a sponsor?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You want me to sponsor you?" or something like that. And I was like, "I want to get sober, but not that damn sober," right? Like, like, this cat was on a whole different level, right? And I'd come from this, like, we all love you, and like, rehab is all this like fluffy place. And Tarek's kind of hardcore, if y'all don't know Tarek. And look, I did everything wrong early on, okay? But I did enough things right. Right? Just to be clear, like, there is nothing perfect about my story about how I got here today. Right? But y'all said get a sponsor. I got my first sponsor. I found the funny guy in the room. We'll leave his name out. He's still funny. If you go to meetings in Atlanta, he'll make you laugh. But like 2 weeks in, he asked me for a fucking loan. And I was like, and then he was telling me things like, "Hey man, all guys have like girls on the side. It's just part of being a guy." And like, something inside was like, not sure that's where we're going with this. And, I wasn't sure if the marriage was going to make it at this point, but like, probably don't need to be doing that shit again. And so somehow, some way, I got the courage to fire that sponsor, and I got another one real quick. Right. And look, I walked through the steps with him in a way that was quick, to the point. I may use, or people may use this word, watered down AA. But here's the thing, right? I remember, like, I've recently gone back to some guys and said, "Hey, you know, what if all that stuff was wrong?" And like, the guys that I worked with and shared that experience, because that was the only experience I had. Like, you know, am I fucking dealing a death wish? And like, yeah, you think you're that fucking powerful? A, you're not. It has nothing to do with you. B, did you drink or drug during that time? And the answer was, I hadn't. Okay? Now, that being said, something was missing, right? So I started getting involved. I started rolling up my sleeves. I still want to feel important, right? So I want to participate in these things. I get drawn to guys that also have big appetites, right? Like, I call them like pit bulls in recovery, right? Because I mean, somebody told me a long time ago, and they told me they don't like the way it sounds anymore, but I still like it. You know, I use like a pit bull. I'd like to recover like a pit bull, too. And here's the thing. People say, "Well, that's not sustainable. You can't do it." Okay, well, 5.5 years later, I'm still pretty fucking enthusiastic for this thing, right? I attend conferences. I sponsor a lot of guys. We get involved. We do a lot of service work. My enthusiasm hasn't waned, so I don't know. That just hadn't been my experience, okay? But one of the benefits of staying in the middle of the bed is like, I was able to weather this period of like going through the steps, working with guys with maybe a watered down version. And then like, I start reconnecting with Tarek again. Right. And like, I start having these, wanting to get more involved. So I invite Tarek and Brandon down, and we're going to do a wall workshop at noon. And like, of course, in my head, I'm like, "Well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be this great guy and do this for everybody else." Right. Right. Like, look at me. I'm new in this community. I've left Atlanta. I moved to Noonan. I'm a big fucking deal. But I'm sitting in the back, right? And like, these guys get done. And if you haven't heard one of their wall workshops, I suggest you listen to it. You listen to Noonan once on the fireboard. But I saw these two grown-ass men start talking about God, the relationship with God. Like, pretty much the whole thing was about this relationship with power. Spirit, universe, God, whatever. I like the word power because I still have things from my childhood about that big G word that feels uncomfortable. So power works for me, but I don't give a shit what you call it. Something that's more powerful than me, okay? And something inside of me got attracted to that. Like, how does a grown-ass man sit up there and say something like that? See, I thought that was weak. Something inside me wasn't, you know, I was sober. I hadn't picked up and used, but something was missing. Okay. So I shoot out this like text to Brandon and Tarek. I'm like, hey, I think I need a new sponsor. Like, didn't want to send it, but I sent it. Right, and I was kind of hopeful, if I'm being honest, that Brandon would be like, I gotcha. Because like Tarek seemed like a really hard option. But Tarek fucking responded and was like, call me tomorrow. I was like, oh fuck, here we go. So the T-Rex, as I call them. But we went back through these steps, right? And like we started going through this, you know, a real deep, thorough dive, right? Of like this powerlessness, right? Like the first step, right? I couldn't even explain powerlessness to you, but through these experiences and talking about it, right? Like Tarek explained to me, like, do you believe that you have any fucking say so over whether or not you use or not? You know, I think I know what the answer is, but in my head, I wasn't so sure, right? Tarek was explaining to me, and we went through these steps, like, that I'm fucked. Right? I like how Brandon says the drug of no choice. Right? When I went home from that hospital, I don't think I had a choice anymore. What about the times that I swore the morning after or whatever, I'm not going to do this again? After hitting those kids with those balls, I just need to stop using cocaine, right? I need to stop using drugs. Maybe I can just drink a little bit. I couldn't stop, y'all. I had crossed over this threshold, and I had 1,000 other examples that I could point to, right? I'm just referring to a couple tonight. So he's really spending time driving home this idea of Scott's fucked, left to his own devices, powerless. Right? Before this, I'd breezed through 1, 2, and 3. I remember thinking, I was like, when are we going to get past 1? But like, I also couldn't deny that something was changing inside, right? And basically said, hey, look, you're fucked. But the good news is, like, we're going to go through 2 through 12, and that's how you're going to unfuck yourself. Okay? And then we start going into like this step 3 about making a contract with God, a decision. Right, to be his agent, to be his child. What does that look like? For a guy like me, like the idea of being your agent or being your child. See, I didn't like the idea of a child. I didn't like this concept of father because I didn't like my dad. I don't like being told to wear a fucking sport coat. Okay? It's all about me is my problem. I'm the fucking problem. But then he described it to me in this way of like making this contract. And what does a contract look like, right? Like a guy that lived and died by contracts. Am I going to break this contract? For the first time in my life, I really sincerely gave a fuck about this contract. What happened? I didn't give a shit about anybody. My kids, my wife, and now all of a sudden like there's this thing that I can't see. But I give a shit about this decision I'm making, right? We start going back through an in-depth 4-step, right? No surprise, I start finding out a lot of shit and resentments and fears from my first couple 4 steps are still there, right? I'm the common denominator. You see, I think that you and the world should behave the way I think you should, and any deviation from that's a problem for me. I'm going to step on your fucking toes. You're probably going to retaliate. You know, I'm going to fast forward a little bit, you know, and if Tarek was here, he'd jump all over me and correct me for doing this wrong. But, like, I want to talk about the power of 9 and how Tarek and this new way of doing this, right? Like, making an amends process and being thorough with my 8-step list, right? The first couple times I'd gone through it, right, I had run roughshod over thousands of people. Okay, now, I have not made a list of 1,000 people, but I know there's thousands of people that I have harmed, okay, over the years. Can't remember all of them. But all my sponsors before, they gave me that get-out-of-free-jail card where they said, hey, look, if it hurts, harms those or others, like, you know, you don't need to do it, right? Like, what about all these women that I was running around with? Right? What about my ex-girlfriends? What about my ex-girlfriend's parents when I was doing all this awful shit with them, and where do I think they went? Did I ever consider what that father, what that mother may have gone through? No, bullshit. I had harmed these people already, right? It was time for me to put myself out there. The best one I can tell you is like recently, like my 13-year-old son goes to school. All this stuff that happened on December 20, 2016, by the way, made its way on the CNN. It made its way on the AJC. It made its way on the 11 Live News. It made its way on the Channel 2. It was all over the fucking media with my picture all over the place. It's still out there. You can find it. Right? And so these kids, right? They're 13, 14 years old. And at my kids' school, we moved to this new town. They start firing off some of these old articles that you can find on the internet. Not that old. I'd like to think they're older than they are, but there's just like 5.5 years ago. And I thought I was making a living amends to my son. Right? Like, I will tell you, like, having that type of stuff come up in the news and his friends running around with it is a terrifying proposition for me. In the old days, for sure, what I do is like, I try to ignore it. I try to bury it. I try to make up some lies, some bullshit. I probably am going to be high and drunk pretty soon. But, like, something about me said, pick up the phone and call some guys, right? You see, what was happening was I was actually being given this gift of making a nine-step amends to my 13-year-old son. So I'm sweating this. Something happened inside, right? And I find myself reaching out to my son and having a conversation, asking him, do you want to tell me how this feels? We walk through this together. My son looks at me and says, Dad, I love you. I'm proud of the guy you are today. My same guy that cheated on every woman he could with his mom, splattered his name and my name all over the nightly news and embarrassed him. But he's telling me he loves me no matter what. How does that happen? This is the same kid that when his mother was trying to deliver him, coffee was more important to me than he was. You know, recently, my wife sent me this text, and she said, something's changed inside you. And I said, what's that? And she says, I said, good or bad? She said, good. So good that I'm afraid. I mean, we talk about, like, shattering someone's trust. Do what I did. We talk about traumatizing another human being. Treat them the way I treated my wife. How does she ever trust me again? What happens? Y'all, I'm telling you, I had nothing to do with this. Now, footnote, 2 weeks later, I'm not perfect. Apparently, I was changing in a bad way. She picked up the phone, she called Tarek, Brandon, and Brandon's wife, Carrie, and said that Scott's fucking, you know, being an asshole. So, I need to keep coming back, and I need to keep being surrounding myself with you people, okay? I'm a spiritual fucking giant, long ways from it. All I can tell you is like today, I was going to send this thing. My daughter writes this song, okay, and puts it on a video. I tried to send it to, when you guys were reading the preamble, I was trying to send it to Brandon. That's what you guys heard. I apologize for interrupting. But I was going to let Brandon play a little bit of it. I don't know if it came through his phone or not. But she wrote this song talking about how much she loved her mom and dad. And she's smiling in this video, and she's dancing and singing, and how does this happen? The restorative, regenerative power of God. That's how. I didn't willpower this. As a matter of fact, the most free I ever felt was the absolute greatest ass whooping I'd ever received. I had not very little to do with this. I was just willing. I got beaten. I got that just right ass whooping that they talk about, y'all. It made me willing enough, open-minded enough, and honest enough. And listen, if I'm being honest, y'all know damn well I wasn't telling the truth all the time when I first came back in here. I get these guys to tell me, I'm telling you the truth, telling the truth. Like, I know you're full of shit. It's okay. Then we had this 10-step thing, you know? It's like, which I'm still struggling with, right? Well, watch, ask, turn, cease, right? But I'm getting better with it. I found that I have this, like, group, a small group of men that I can call and talk with everything about. Sometimes I don't want to hear what they have to say, okay? Especially when it comes to relationships with my wife, right? Because I want to be right. But how did I get to a place like where I start taking suggestions, right? Somebody says, put on a coat. Somebody says, hold her hand. Right? These are the things that I need help with. I need to take direction, right? Because I was like this alien that got dropped down on planet Earth, and like nobody gave me an instruction manual on how to do this, right? So I'm relearning. And then here was the greatest gift of all, right? And like this happened a long time ago. Like for me, is like 10, 11, and 12. You see, everything up until the point that I walked in here was about me. That's it. My needs, my wants, you be damned. Right, and God starts saying, like, if you want to keep this thing, right? And early on, it wasn't about serving power or God, spirit, universe. It was about, I don't want to use or drink again, so I think I need to get one of these sponsees. You start having these experiences, right? You start getting inconvenienced, right? Guys start saying, stop being a spiritual fucking thief and make yourself available to the newcomer, just like the motherfuckers that were here when you walked in. If you guys weren't here when I came in, what about that meeting, right? It was a Spearheads meeting in Atlanta that I walked into that he was referring to when I came back from Arizona. What if they weren't there, right? What if when I showed up, funny little story, it was in this like posh church in Buckhead back then called Peachtree Presbyterian. I walked up. I didn't know where I was. I walk in, like literally like this church has like ballet and like all kinds of shit, y'all. And I walk in and like there's this congregation of people and they're in like the stadium seats. And I walk right in like the newcomer straight out of rehab. I'm like, is this the Cocaine Anonymous meeting? And I mean, the jaws just hit the floor. And this one little lady in the back goes, no, this is the church choir. How I didn't run, I don't know. Power probably had something to do with it that day. But what if they weren't there? Right? What about the folks at Early Bird and Triangle where I first started being willing to get a sponsor? What about all those folks? What if they weren't there? So what if I came in and just got mine and said, I'm good. I got the wife back, got the kids back, got the money back. Nobody except for a bunch of 13-year-old kids really Googling that shit on the internet anymore. Reputation's kind of back. And I said, fuck it, I'm out. Because this is what I see a lot of people doing. All right? I don't want to be inconvenienced is what it's about. It's all about me. I'm going to come get mine. I'm going to go home. Who knew? One of the greatest paradoxes of my life is when I make it about you, I get mine in spades. One of the greatest gifts I've ever been given is sponsorship. To watch somebody come in hopeless, to share with them verbatim from the big book what was shared with me, and to watch those dots start connecting. Not perfectly, imperfectly. Then to watch them start doing it with somebody else. You see, I cultivated a fellowship I crave. I will tell you guys this, right? Shortly after December 20, 2016, all those people I had hanging around the hoop, they were gone. They were gone. Let me be clear with something. Like I did not grow up wanting to be a member of Cocaine Anonymous. This was not a goal of mine. If I'm being honest, I didn't think this was going to work for me. I believe some of y'all that it worked for y'all. But I wasn't sure it was going to work for me. See, I thought I was different. I thought I was smarter. I thought my experiences maybe were different than yours. For a long time, for the first 19 years, I thought maybe I didn't use as much as you did. By the end, I thought maybe I used more than you did. But I just got willing enough to start taking some fucking directions. For the first time in my life, I became teachable. A set-aside prayer, right? I find myself in a car driving up with a group of four men, right? One of them says some really crazy shit on the way up here, and we'll be laughing about it the whole way home, too. But how does this happen? My wife is not worried about where I am tonight. My daughter sends me a text saying, I wish I could listen to you speak one time. And it's like, not yet, baby. You're 9 years old. Look, I kept coming back long enough, guys, that I wanted to come back. Right? Something's changed, right? Like, I don't come and I don't show up to the meetings anymore because I'm afraid I'm on drink and use, right? That obsession has been lifted, okay? This making it about you thing is real. And it's the greatest paradox of my life. Now, I will tell you, I come up short in my relationships at my house with my wife and my son right now. Right? In these rooms with y'all, when we're doing work outside these rooms, and like, by the way, these rooms aren't enough, right? Like, if you're not out there, outside these rooms, meeting with a sponsor, meeting with sponsees, being of service to other places, like, look, y'all, if you're not being inconvenienced in this way of life, you're probably not doing it right, because this, as if the sponsee's not driving you nuts, you may need another one. This is an inconvenient proposal. And it's also the greatest gift of my life. I don't know what else to add other than it's a real treat to come up here, right, with a group of guys to drive almost an hour and a half up here from Noonan and know that when this guy over here sitting with a shirt on, he says, I know all about you. I know he's being a little bit of a smartass, but he does know all about me. He was right. Right? Like, y'all are back in Arizona. They said, find your tribe, Scott. I found my tribe. It's y'all. And I can find y'all in every single town and city across the world. So don't miss this. I came damn near close to missing it myself. And thank God somebody reminded me the only wrong way to do this thing is not to do it at all. And I appreciate y'all letting me sit up here and talk for an hour and a half. And it's a pleasure to be with y'all. And Yoda, I'd like to take my jacket off now, please.